Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler-Thompson.
My name is Adam Alvarez. Thanks for joining us for episode 58. And it must be getting towards winter, mate, because for the first time this year, I had to flick the headlights on the drive down tonight.
Yeah, Adam, outside the windows of our studio slash dining room, it is very dark. And if you just look out to the fruit trees out there, Adam, many of the leaves are now falling from the tree. So winter is not that far away.
It's not that far away. And it could have been the fact that I was so late tonight. I was a little bit later in getting down here tonight. But as I flicked them on halfway down, I thought, yeah, it wasn't so long ago that it was beautiful nights coming down here. And it's very dark.
Yep. The nights feels like they're getting slightly longer, Adam. And sounds like your meetings after school are getting longer.
Yeah, well, we had a bit of a later one tonight, but sometimes you have those ones. But, mate, before we do get stuck in tonight, we did want to quickly address Anzac Day. And, you know, we've done that the last couple of years and talking about what we talk about with the kids. But I know Anzac Day is an important day on your calendar, an important time to spend with your dad. Am I right?
It is, yeah. But Dad and I spend, the whole family, but Dad and I go to the dawn service every year, Adam. It's an important day. Always thinking about my grandfather, Dad's dad, on that day, amongst other things.
Yep.
It's been interesting getting the Year 3 students gauging their understanding of Anzac Day this year. A lot of them didn't really know, and fair enough, didn't really know the history behind it. And you might recall, Adam, at uni, you and I did that Australian Studies elective in Year 1.
That was where we met.
Well, that's where sort of my love of Australian history kind of was kindled. I didn't really have it before then. But I had some parents approach me on Tuesday, Adam, saying that I'd lit a bit of a spark under their
terrific
kids' interest on Anzac Day, some of them wanting to go to their first dawn service. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, that made it for me. It
good stuff. Yeah, it's different because you don't quite know what to teach. I know with the 1-2s, we talked a little bit about, simply what does Anzac stand for? And what are the links there and going to Gallipoli and how they fought for us. And we didn't really have an opportunity to go in deep. And I don't think it's my job as a teacher for 1-2 students to go in deep. I think it's kind of, you know, give them a little bit of an understanding about what it is and how important it is. And we spoke about, you know, when we had our service at school, making sure that when it was the last post and the minute silence, that they do that respectfully. They're not looking at other people and things. And I was really proud of them. They really did. They really took that on board.
That's great to hear. Yeah. I got a little insight into maybe how much more perhaps difficult it might be in future years to get the next generation to understand the brevity of it. I think respect is something that will be, I think, fairly easy to keep up. But in terms of understanding the size and the magnitude of why we have that day, is going to be tough because, you know, society and life is quite different now.
It is. But you also hope as well that even if you want to keep that there, but you hope that it's not rekindled because we have to have another war. That we have to send people away to do this all over again and it's, you know, it starts again. You'd rather try and really, you know, like you said, keep the brevity of that and the importance of that, but you know, you don't want it to dull over time, but you certainly don't want it reignited because Australia's had to go to war for, you know, World War III and, you know, terrible things happen again. So,
well, yeah, before we finish up, it was interesting because one of the questions I had from a Year 3 student during our discussion last week was, will there be a World War III? And I thought, what a fascinating question, because we just talked about what Anzac Day is and what we commemorate. And I talked briefly about Australia's participation in both World Wars and... Yeah, the looks on the faces, it's something that they find hard to understand. And it was black and white. Will there be another World War III?
Because there's no maybe. There will or there won't be, really. There's
that's
no
right,
maybes.
Yeah. But I think it's important to let them understand that, you know, there's a lot more countries that, I guess, are on a similar page these days.
That's right.
Are there, Adam?
Yeah. So, look, mate, it's an important day on the calendar, and we always remember it really well. And we do want to get stuck in, mate. So you and I are about to go to war of our first topic.
Well, Adam, during the week you shared an article from The Age about writing, in particularly with senior school students, and talked about the writing results of Australian students seemed to dip quite severely, according to this article, by the time the students hit Year 9 and then into their senior schooling. Now, firstly, Adam, just another article that's hit the mainstream where apparently Australian students are struggling. It seems to be more and more... common for this to be happening in the media.
It not only does it seem to be common to be happening in the media, but it always happens around big moments in teachers. So NAP plans a few weeks away. Let's get the negative articles going on. So we can. It's almost like they're trying to say to parents, well, don't expect good marks on their writing because, I'm sorry, all teachers across Australia don't teach writing properly, which, as you and I well know, is absolute rubbish.
Well, it is. There is a line from... it's based on a... Academics from the Australian Catholic University's Learning Sciences Institute said that the writing skills of young Australians are a real concern. One of the professors said that, well, they believe that the explicit teaching of writing often stops when students reach grade 4.
Now,
Well, that's not happening in the schools that I've worked at, Adam.
Me either. If anything, they ramp it up when they hit those levels.
Yeah, I think, particularly in Year 5, obviously, with NAPLAN, there is a language part that gets tested, but you're not just teaching it for that. But I know that, well, I know the school I'm at, spelling is part of the AIP at the moment, so trying to get the kids to have a love of words and a love of using words in well-structured sentences. Yeah. So, my question is, though, Adam, that I think still, as a professional, it's difficult to strike a balance teaching writing, particularly in the middle school, the middle years of primary school. It's hard to strike that balance between the authorial side, so the craft of writing, because we're really pushed to do the text types, aren't we? As opposed to the secretarial side, the secretarial side of things. The punctuation and the grammar.
And I think particularly in the first half of, the first semester of every school year, you get away from the secretarial side of things. It's easy to get away from that because you've got NAPLAN hanging over your head. And that really affects grade twos and grade fours and even grade sixes as well because, they've still got the NAPLAN the next year. You've got narratives, you've got persuasive, and there's a push and a tendency to focus on, we just need to teach these kids how to plan and how to write a narrative, a plan and how to write a persuasive piece, and it's easy to overlook a lot of those other aspects that really make up a good writing piece. And I liked what you said about vocab. We want the kids to have new vocabulary and really add these words and understand these words, but it's easy to get lost in amongst all the other things that we're pushed to do at this time of the year.
Yeah, that's right. And look, writing's not going to be for all. Now, that might sound like a strange thing to say because it's such a fundamental part of us as a species, but in terms of creative writing and even persuasive writing to a degree, it's not going to be for all. But I think there is a great argument for teaching kids from a young age how to really express themselves in a clear and, I guess, entertaining way. But it does get difficult, Adam, because these students who are getting to Year 9 and above are clearly coming through. Maybe they've fallen through the gaps. Obviously, with a lack of something, whether it's maybe, spelling, maybe they're using commas, it's just poor. Now, we know that that's not covered in the curriculum, I don't think, at that level, because there's other stuff to be covered.
Yeah, and I think you might be right. And I'd love to throw it out to some of our secondary teacher listeners and actually ask them particularly if they think the transition from grade 6 to year 7 has an impact on that. And we were talking a little bit off-air about it in the sense that do kids get to senior school and there's, I wouldn't say less accountability, but they're going to so many different places and they are, expected to look after themselves a bit more that it's easier for them to just drop off and do the bare minimum and, I'll just get this in at the last minute and do enough and get over the line. Whereas, in primary school, they're really, everyone's doing this and there's an expectation. Is that where the fall off can occur, where the independence ramps up and therefore the expectation and what they feel like they can do goes down, I guess?
I think when the independence ramps up and students start writing more than what they did in the really early years, then there's more scope for mistakes, isn't there?
Yeah,
which is fine to a degree. I think what we're maybe leaving out of our discussion is the fact that you and I both work at schools that do not have a large amount of students with English as their second language. So again, I guess we'd like to hear from those secondary teachers, particularly in the urban areas of Victoria, particularly around Melbourne. I mean, is this another thing that maybe this article doesn't touch on? We have to put in there that there's a lot of students who are learning English as a second language. So the learning of the grammar, and because English is such a difficult language, of the grammar and the punctuation is going to be more difficult for them.
Yep. And also, what are they marking? What are they actually marking in the NAPLAN? What are they really looking for? Are they marking higher about the plan? What are they looking for? Their spelling mistakes don't matter.
I believe in the writing, and I could be wrong, and I'm happy for listeners to correct me. In the writing in Year 3, I think they're probably more looking for the structure of the text. So if it's a persuasive text, can they write it? Have they got good arguments? Can they structure their text, use paragraphs? I'm not so sure whether the focus is on the secretarial stuff so much there. But then we know there's the language conventions test, which really tests their understanding of how a sentence is structured, along with vocab.
That's right. But also, I think the language conventions can get away from the fact in the writing that you want to see those language conventions in the actual writing. Now, giving them one sentence where they've got to put in a couple of talking marks, well, that's nice. But when they're actually given something to write, a narrative to write about that includes those things, can they actually do it? It's kind of that thing they're getting a little taste here and not seeing enough here. There's so many different things, to go with it.
Look, to finish off, there's a comment from an English teacher at a Jewish school who consistently perform above the standard in writing in NAPLAN, saying that they constantly have students reviewing their own writing and that writing is focused on across all subjects. Now, that's certainly a goal to work towards.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? But we find in the crowded curriculum sometimes that if you're teaching a concept in something else, you're not really focusing on the writing.
Yeah.
And you might remind the kids and try and say, well, you know, don't forget, we're making sure we're getting our message across, so we need correct grammar and things. But it's difficult. There's really a lot to do as a teacher in those lessons, isn't there?
There is, mate. So look, we want to throw it out to everyone, if you're doing the NAP plan this year, 3, 5, 7 or 9, or you've got any thoughts about writing in general, because I think it is such a broad topic and it's easy to miss certain things within the writing, you know, even just handwriting or having kids, you know, writing within the lines and all these things I'm talking about from my level there. If you've got any thoughts about the writing in general, we'd really love to hear them, wouldn't we, Rick?
Right, absolutely, please, because it's not going to go. It's not going to go away.
So, Rico, second topic for tonight is something that we can actually want to link back to talking about Anzac Day and what we brought up earlier is a topic you brought up in an article you shared with me during the week about media content that can scare kids. Now, with the advent of social media everywhere, Instagram, Facebook, you know, the news, all those sorts of things, it's very easy for younger kids to be exposed to some really scary stuff and to actually see some violent and horrible things right there in front of themselves on the TV screen or on their phone or on their iPad. And it can actually have some, really terrible long-lasting effects for these students.
Yeah, well, some studies have shown, and the studies have come through the Children and Families Research Centre, children can get scared by the news at a young age, which then can result in anxieties and sometimes a phobia that can last into adulthood in severe cases. And we thought we'd touch on Anzac Day. And I hark back to my question in the intro that was asked by a Year 3 student, will World War 3 happen? Now, I'm linking that question to the kind of news that kids see these days, because like you said, news also happens in real time, you know, doesn't it? Like kids don't have to wait these days for the packaged news at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock like we did or our parents did. It can happen in real time.
Yeah.
Now, firstly, if we think of the older students, there's probably an onus on teachers to help out and guide them to understand that, because if we've got 15 and 16 year olds on Twitter, for example, a major disaster might be happening in the world, or a horrible tragic event, and that news is coming through on the spot on Twitter, but it could be wrong. You know, it could be eyewitnesses, and the real facts haven't come through. So again, it's that critical reader stuff. How do we help the kids navigate that? But going back to the young kids, Adam, I don't know about you, but we've talked about September 11 before in the podcast about the reaction I know I had when I was in a classroom volunteering from the kids. But because it's so prevalent, it's so easy to see pictures these days. I'm even talking natural disasters. How do we help the kids, what's our role to kind of help them understand it and not hopefully to get these anxieties that's going to affect them later?
I think it's a great opportunity to talk to the kids. An earthquake, for example, comes up. I think there was an earthquake even last year or something that happened that was in the news, and a few kids came in and spoke about it. And I actually took the opportunity to stop reading for 10 minutes. And we got it up on the big screen and we looked at the world and talked, and it was an opportunity to talk about the tectonic plates and why some areas happen than others, and where we are, earthquakes don't happen very often and things like that. And they could have a discussion and ask questions and put them at ease, because it's easy for them to see, I've seen an earthquake happen there, why can't it happen at my area where I live tomorrow? What's going to stop it from happening tomorrow? And then that's where those anxieties start to come in. But that's a wonderful opportunity for us as educators to sit down and go, no, let's have a look at it. Let's look at it critically. Let's look at why it happens. And even if it did happen here, what's in place and all those sorts of things. It's a great opportunity to open them up to think, in a more wider perspective about it all.
Great one. I think that's really fascinating. I mean, in the article, it says that children under 8 are more likely to be frightened by things that look scary. Deformed creatures, vicious animals, disease, natural disasters. Children over 8 are starting to get that abstract thought.
Yes.
It says that they can kind of start to imagine realistically seeing some of these things happen to their family and friends.
Yeah.
So I guess the realistic threats, terrorism and those things can come in now, maybe to those kids, because they can maybe see, what would happen if there was some sort of disaster or bomb going off or something near where I go to school or near where I go out into the town. So, look, I think what you mentioned is exactly right. Our role is to guide, and I think I don't think it's our role to explain everything in absolute detail.
No, I agree.
But there is a mention at the bottom of the article about what parents are doing at home. Now, I'm not a parent yet. You're a young parent. I think parents have to take some responsibility here, particularly for the young kids, about how much they're exposed to with the news.
I agree. And I think I actually want to go further from the news and talk about movies and gaming as well. I think there's a real problem, and it's a very real issue that some of these kids, younger kids, can be desensitized from some of these horrible things at a really young age. Now, you know, years ago in the 5-6s, I've had kids playing, you know, I've mentioned it before, but quite a number of podcasts ago, about kids playing Grand Theft Auto, you know, 11 years old, and it's an R-rated game with 18 plus. It has horrible, you know, it's got lots of violence and sexualized discussions and things going on. There's movies that they're watching going, oh, Mr. LaVars, did you see this? And I'm going, what? Yeah, in the back of my mind, I'm going, that's an R-rated movie. What are you doing watching that? There's so many of these things in there that the more they see it, the more the less shock that's going to happen, and the more that they're desensitized to these things.
That is the key word there, isn't it? And that opens up a whole other thing about respect, doesn't it? Because a lot of the stuff you just mentioned that are in those games sort of go against everything that we're trying to teach our kids about respecting others.
It does, and I don't think the parents understand that, and I don't think the parents would actually... How many parents would have that discussion? Mm. You know, even when they got to, say, 15 years old and they wanted to play an MA game, would they have a discussion and say, look, you do realise this is a game? This is a game that's been made up. There aren't, you know, playing... I'm going to use this off the top of my head. There's a game called Dead Space where they're out in space and there's aliens on there and there's lots of violence and stuff. Would you have a discussion and say, well, you do realise this is not real? Mm. This is just a game. They've made up these monsters. Yep. They've made up these places. It's just for you to go and have, you know, some fun and kill some time in and do that sort of stuff. Do they actually sit down and have that discussion, or do they give them the game and go, oh, gee, this is a ripper. You might get a bit scared, and away they go, you know?
Well, I'm not sure, and I wonder whether this particular family did, because I had a student on Tuesday when we reflected on Anzac Day and what people did, and on Anzac Day, on the day off, one student brought up the fact that there'd been their story about the 15-year-old who'd been arrested about supposedly planning a terror plot on Anzac Day. Now, that was what they brought up. That was their reflection on Anzac Day. Yeah. And I decided, politely sort of said, we're actually not going to discuss that. Mm. I didn't say it in those words, but I thought, how interesting that that's come straight up. That's there. When I mentioned, let's talk about Anzac Day, that's what came up. And that worries me, though.
Is that the media's fault, though? Is that the media's
fault? Well, it was the leading story on Monday night, I think after what was happening at all the dawn services, that was the next leading story. So, yes, there is some...
Why do they need to run with that? I mean, why do they need to glorify... I mean, this guy's gotten pages and pages of stuff out there about potentially planning a terrorist thing. Why can't they go, look, we got him and we don't need to really talk about it? Don't give him that stuff, and don't throw it out to these kids that, you know, because they might start thinking, well, these Special Australia Days, what happens if terrorists want to bomb and do things so each of these days? What happens, you know, later on in the year we've got Remembrance Day, kids are going to start to get worried about, I don't want to go down and celebrate because there might be a terrorist around.
It's interesting, isn't it? As adults, a lot of us have got still that feeling where, well, we want to know those sort of stories, we want to hear about them, don't we? And I think we've got to be careful with what, you know, our kids overhear us talking about.
They do.
So we'd love to hear what your experiences are like, particularly again the secondary teachers, you know, what do you hear the kids talking about these days?
Okay, mate, third topic for tonight. It's a bit of a fun one, actually, and you brought it to the podcast planning attention during the week when it was shared on Facebook and then suggested by your good friend, Scott Duncan, about whether or not we should have this on the podcast. And it's about some things you might find in the teaching staff room. Now, I can hear all of the listeners out there going, oh, and they can already think about some of the things we're going to bring up, can't they?
Well, Adam, I don't know. Sometimes when you walk through the... staff room, you trip over one of the things that's on this list, and it's the leftover Tupperware containers.
And they're everywhere. Yeah. And actually, there that you mentioned it, at one of our small tables has empty Tupperware, and there's people continually going, right, this is your Tupperware, please make sure you take it home, claim it. You know what I might do in the next couple of days if it's still there? I might just take it all. I'm just going to take it all and bring it home. Who's going to know?
I don't understand why people leave their Tupperware at home. I can understand if you've got a two-day meal that you leave, but I just kind of don't understand how they accumulate. I've seen a staff room fridge at the end of a term. It's diabolical.
It is, and Tupperware's important because, in the great words of Kramer from Seinfeld, it's the patented burp. It locks in freshness. You know, it's good stuff. Why would you want to leave them around?
It does. And look, I want to thank Scott because he shared this on his Facebook page and I just liked it. And then I did think to myself, this could be something good to talk about. Now, we've talked about staff rooms before, Adam, but one of the things I loved was, and we'll put the link up on the blog, because there's the specific chairs that are in the staff room. Now, there's kind of... through my career, there's this set of chairs. You know, the ones that are the same colour, they're quite low, and they're called a couch because even though they're all separate chairs, you put them together and they look like kind of one long one. But it's never a couch, and yet it gets called a couch all the time.
It shouldn't be called a couch at all.
But people flock to those chairs during a staff meeting because they're a little bit more comfy.
Well, they are, but they're also low. I kind of feel like you've got to lean forward a little bit, like your feet are kind of almost, your knees are around your ears a little bit.
Absolutely.
It's a bit full on, they're always there. And look, the other one... that we thought we wanted to bring up that I think everyone would agree with are the old passive-aggressive notes in the staff room. Now, this one here has a thing that says, don't leave your teacups here, dot, 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 thanks, smiley face. Did they say, I'm trying to be a bit happy about this, but I'm not really, I'm actually quite annoyed that people keep leaving their teacups here. Yeah,
there is nothing like the passive-aggressive note in the staff room or the passive-aggressive email about stuff that's left in the sink. And there's certain people who work in a school who send those. But, I mean, look, a little part of me thinks, just wash your cup before you go. But
how hard is it really?
Yeah, it is funny. And look, I've even seen a passive-aggressive note inside a toilet saying, use the spray sparingly. The word permeates was used on this particular poster, Adam. So now, I love that.
I'm sorry, but you can't tell someone that, because if you've had a fiery encounter with a dodgy vindaloo the night before, and it's gotten to you by lunchtime at school the next day, you don't want to be going, I can only do this one, and someone's got to cop it, in the face.
Well, speaking of things that are maybe fiery and a little bit messy, Adam, have you ever gone to the old cutlery drawer in the staff room and noticed that? And this is where I think someone has eaten something like a vindaloo. Mm. They've haven't sort of bothered to rinse the piece of cutlery, put it straight in the dishwasher, and then of course they just come straight out of the dishwasher. We know the dishwasher's not perfect, and you go to get a bit of cutlery next day from the drawer, and it's still soiled.
Yes, and the laziness of the teacher who might be who might be emptying it was. The bell's going and just gone close enough and just popped it straight back in there and that sort of stuff. So there's some absolutely ripping ones in here. I do want to bring up as well the industrial sized barrels of instant coffee, but the other one I want to bring up is the industrial sized barrel of Milo. You have that huge one sitting there that no one ever uses.
Well, it can sit there for years. Who drinks Milo in a staff room these days?
I've got to admit that I have from time to time.
Fair enough.
Like a Milo because I'm not a tea or a coffee drinker in the staff room. And so on a really cold day, there's been times where I've got, like a hot Milo with plenty of sugar in there and that sort of stuff. But there's always that huge one there. Mm. But I might add, it's never full. You always get in there, it always feels like it's empty. And then we need to refill that, another one comes in. It's half empty already.
Half empty already. Now, look, another, we'll shoot through a couple more, but another one is the good old retirement card or happy wedding card that's sitting there for everyone to sign, and the person who it's for has already seen it.
It's already read halfway through it.
And then the leftover cake, if there's a special morning tea, all the leftover stuff gets chucked in the fridge, doesn't it? And
yes,
then brought back out, and a couple of sandwiches that have gone a bit stale on the side.
We got a rule, you can't have any of that at lunch. And it's there in case someone's missed out. It can't be all brought out back again to eat at lunchtime. It's got to be held over for the morning tea the next morning, just in case someone's missed out or anything. I think it's actually for me.
It loses its freshness.
It does. Maybe you should stick it in the leftover Tupperware to keep it lock in that freshness.
Now, look, another one is that people sometimes bring in stuff that hasn't been eaten at their home and just dumps it there. So if you've got like a really bad box of shortbreads or really cheap box of chocolates, people will just dump them on the staff room table while the staff will eat them.
Someone does. Or I actually check now, and I know we've got one more we want to do, but I always check and say, who made this? And they say, oh, a parent brought it in, they made it with their kids. I don't go anywhere near it. I don't even want to touch that.
So anyway, there's a few other things like the lights in staff rooms, the low coffee tables that are always too low. There's a certain type of clock. I really love that one. A pile of someone's abandoned marking. And then the last one, Adam says, there's actually no teachers ever in there because we're all too busy.
Yeah, it's all too busy having got time to go to the staff room. So if you have any of those in your staff room or even other ones that just kind of, you think to yourself, is this normal? This happens in our staff room. Does this actually happen in other staff rooms? We'd love to hear about it because it's something we could bring up as an anecdote in the following weeks.
Definitely. So thanks, Scott, for sharing that one. A ripper. All right, Adam, it's your anecdote.
It is. Thanks, mate. Well, you mentioned it when I came in and you said, geez, Adam, what a nice shirt. You've got a nice shirt on today. Not that I don't dress up when I come down here because I actually try and show you up in front of your wife. But wearing the lovely shirt today... It was school photo day today.
Well, I thought so, because just for our listeners, obviously you can't see him, although maybe we'll take a shot of the lovely check that he's wearing, it is very smart, Adam.
Thank you very much. And I thought
something was going on, and photo day was
school photo day, and school photo day is always filled with some fantastic things going on. I thought we might be able to reminisce about some of it, because we've had a lot now. We've been teaching for a decade. We've had 10 school photo days.
I know. Well, I know in the past... In past podcasts, we've talked about the staff photo day, Adam. But I'm looking forward to this because I actually don't think we've really touched on the classroom photo.
No, the classroom one. And the problem is the day it falls on, it could impact on your APT. Now, today, I had APT from 10 to 11 to do some planning, and I got the knock on the door, the old, 1-2-L, 1-2-L, you're up for school photos. Righto, so I had to go out and get my kids and get them over there. And then there's the kerfuffle of, I can't find my little sheet. You know, you got the little form you got to bring back.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't find my form. Well, have you checked your diary? I've looked in there. Go and look again. Oh, there it is. You know, that sort of stuff. Well, get that. And you got to line everyone up and do the shortest, the tallest. And then you can't bring them back down from that because, I'm taller than you. I'm shorter than you. Get in line properly. It's, you know, they're yelling at each other.
It's a social experiment watching kids if like try and get from tallest to shortest.
It is.
There's always massive arguments in the middle of the line, you know, for those medium-sized kids.
Yep, and then there's always the kids who like a certain spot. Now, the kid who gets to sit smack bang in the middle is always pumped. And I had one of my boys who's a ripping kid. He got to sit in the middle of the day and he was fist pumping. Sitting on the chair, yes! He's doing these fist pumps and things. But the one thing that always gets to me, and you might be able to say this, it doesn't happen as much up in the 5-6s, but the 1-2s can't do it properly. So the guy, the cameraman today, was getting frustrated. So he's going, so everyone, then at the front. So knees together, feet together, hands like this in your lap. So keep it there. Okay, so what we're going to do in a moment, I'm going to say one, no, down the front there, just pop your knees back together. Just pop your feet a little bit further ahead there. Beautiful. Okay, so what we're going to, 1-2, no, don't move in. He kept having to stop all the time because the kids just couldn't literally sit there at the front. Knees together, hands in their laps, sitting up straight. They couldn't do it.
Do you know what, though? I don't know about the words. You know how the photographer always says, say cheese? Why don't they just say, just smile? Because every time they say cheese, some kids actually look like they've just had a bit of cheese that's gone off.
Yeah.
They, you know, like the teeth are gritted a little bit.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. Like, they don't know what to do. But he couldn't do it. We had to do like 5 takes. We had to keep stopping going, no, you leaned in there. And I'm standing over the side going, why are you leaning in? He told you just to sit up straight. What are you doing? You know, but
you know, when those photographers get frustrated about it, I'm like, yeah, but you chose this job, though. You chose to be a school photographer, or I don't know, maybe you didn't. So, you know, like, just bear with us here. You know?
But before I get to you, because I want to hear if you've got any stories as well, I like to mess with the kids during the school photo as well. So what I'll do is I'll pick a kid, one kid, and who I know will take it in the right way, but he'll go, the photographer will go, and after I say 1-2-3, you say cheese. 1-2-3, I'll yell out the kid's name instead. So 1-2-3, Rick Kayla Thompson, and it throws them right off. You know, the kids don't know what's coming. Yeah. And I do that in the staff one as well. So Judy Mitchell, if she listens in, she'll love it. I always use her name. So 1-2-3, Judy Mitchell, is when the staff go up. I think it's hilarious. So
That would make for a good photo, Adam.
You'd hope so.
One thing I do notice is that you notice how some kids, and it's probably the parents, have been sent to school on photo day with the first little bit of product in the hair.
Yes, yeah.
And they keep particularly the boys. Yeah, they keep playing with it and ends up being like a little bit of a mess. Some of the girls have, like, you know, the slightly more neater pigtails.
Yeah, or it's out. Or they wear it out because you've got to be up at school. But photo day's kind of like the day they can let their hair down, literally.
And you know what? For some human beings, Adam, that actually continues into adulthood. And some teachers even do that on photo day.
They do.
Let's be honest.
They do that.
A lot of people doll up for teacher photos.
And I love looking around too, going, oh, looking nice today. Got a bit of lippy on and, you know, a bit of extra foundation and all those sorts of things.
And that's just the males in the school.
So, and that is, yeah.
So if you've got a good story from photo day, there's so many of them, please let us know.
So, Rick, that brings an end to episode 58, and I want to say to our listeners that the great man here got through under great duress. He had his flu shot yesterday and has struggled ever since.
The old flu shot, yeah. I mean, hands up if you've had the flu shot. I haven't had one in about 6 years, Adam, and I decided that I might just try it again this year. I mean, I take a lot of natural medicines, but I'm sure a lot of Victorian teachers out there, or Australian teachers, are nodding, going, yes, the flu shot. Yeah. I was feeling fantastic, Adam, and now I've just been a little bit lethargic in the last 24 hours, a little bit achy, and I know that it hasn't injected me with the flu. I understand that, but I know that it's meant to kind of get you ready, but now I kind of feel like they could just rip it back out of me because
mildly
under the weather. Gee, it was a quick needle, though, I'll tell you what.
Bang in and out, isn't it?
Bang in and out, and I got a lollipop.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, that makes you feel good. And look, also, to our listeners, I do want to say that the great man got through under great duress. So just give him a pat on the back. And, mate, I know you wanted to bring up just before we finish the theme song that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago.
Well, the offer's still out there. If anyone's got an idea, or even if they want to put one together, a new theme song for Two Regular Teachers, go for it. So far, in terms of changing the theme song, it's really a too old at the moment. We've had, I know that we've had someone close to us someone in my family has said that they want the drums to stay, Adam. We've had a Brett Lockyer. Thanks, Brett, who listens on Twitter, one of our PLN members. Mm. She likes it. She calls us the Bongo Boys. Yeah, Adam. Bongo. I'm not sure about that one.
We could be called worse.
We could be called worse, but Brett, you know, I don't mind. It stands out,
yeah,
and I like that.
It does.
But our old friend Lee Burns, And his lovely wife, apparently, no, they don't. They look, they even
don't rate
it. Made them laugh out loud when they listened to our theme song. So, Lee, the challenge is out there, though. I mean, we said we'd change it if we were offered something that we thought was valid.
And I do want to throw out there to Burnsy as well. Burnsy's one of those people that you don't like at school, and he's one of these people who has a problem and no solution. So he's whinged about the bongos, hasn't given us a solution, didn't say, listen, boys, I don't like the bongos. Here's me on the you know, tin cans inside making up something else. He's just, you know, had a whinge.
You would never go to your principal and complain about something that they're doing without a solution.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't. So, Burnsy, from the two regular teachers, mate, lift your game.
Lift your game. Yeah. So, thank you for listening to episode 58.
Yeah, and so from me, Adam Alvars.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.